Why work harder when you can work smarter? I mean, we're all looking for ways to make work and life just a little bit easier. Enter the Ford F-150 truck. It helps you get the job done in the smartest way possible. Have you seen the Pro Access tailgate? It improves access to the bed and cargo, which makes it easier to load in tight spaces. Think about the time and hassle you'll save with that feature alone. And I haven't even mentioned the mobile power source, Pro Power On Board. You can power up to 7.2 kilowatts outside your F-150. You're already thinking about all the ways you can put that to use, aren't you? See, I told you, smarter. Tough this smart can only be called F-150. Find your local Ford dealer at Ford.com. Pro Access tailgate available starting spring 2024. See owner's manual for important operating instructions. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pod of thunder and rock and roll. We've got a live one today. The Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. Duff McKagan calling you backstage here at the AV Club in Brussels, Belgium. You've been here. Just did my 100 push-ups. You know. Hey, listen, a friend of mine, super into Star Wars, he wanted to get a face tattoo, like Star Wars face tattoo. You should have seen the Luke on his face. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yes! The Luke on his face. That's a good one. Thanks to Duff for calling him in every single week, no matter where he is. He and Shooter Jennings are, they kicked off the Tenderness Tour here in the States. A great show. Shooter Jennings is actually opening for Guns N' Roses on select dates as well. Go check out all of the Tenderness Tour shows and the Guns N' Roses shows. You can find all that information on DuffOnline.com. You got to see the Tenderness Tour, though. It's completely different from Guns N' Roses. I know you're going to love it. Duff's a great musician. Shooter Jennings is a great backup band. And you're also going to love seeing this guy when AEW's new show Dynamite debuts, premieres October 2nd, next week. Hard to believe. Luchasaurus is here. Lucha's got a great team with Jungle Boy and Marco Stunt. And they had a hell of a match against SCU at All Out Chicago. But now you get to meet the dinosaur behind the mask. Discover what the late, great Dusty Rhodes had to do with the Luchasaurus gimmick, why WWE developmental system wasn't for him, and how Johnny Mundo, a.k.a. Johnny Morrison, helped him hone his in-ring skills. Luchasaurus was on the reality show Big Brother as well before he became Luchasaurus. He's got some crazy stories about living in that house with him in the show. So much to talk about. It's the 50-million-year-old Luchasaurus on Talk is Jericho now. Here we go. All right, so one of the things I love about working with AEW and All Elite, which is the same thing, is that there's a bunch of guys that I've seen before but are just meeting for the first time, hearing about, and one of them is the illustrious Luchasaurus, who, the moment I heard the name, like, it's one of those names where at first, if you take it for face value, it's kind of weird, but it's memorable. Way more memorable than any name I can think of anybody in NXT, for example.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole nother can of worms. Yeah.
How did you get the name Luchasaurus?
Well, it started on Lucha Underground, where they, you know, I got an opportunity to play this character. I didn't know what the character was going to be until the day I showed up. Mm-hmm. And they told me, so yeah, we're going to actually put you in this giant snake mask. And you're just going to go out there and we want you to kind of like chokeslam people. Mm. And there wasn't much more direction than that. And I was like, well, can we cut the thing up so my hair is showing? I wanted to make it a little kind of cool for me. And then I get out there and I do the thing and the crowd starts chanting something. And I don't know what they're chanting. I thought they were chanting, "You just started." I'm like, great. They think I'm green. I was.
You just started.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, this crowd's brutal. Like, am I that bad? So I went to the back and my good friend, Johnny Mundo, John Morrison was back there. And I was like, how was it, man? Did they think they hated it? He's like, no, dude, they were chanting Luchasaurus. It's ridiculous. I'm like, what? what is that? He's like, I don't know, but I think you should run with it. And that's how it started. Just right there. The fans, I was named Vibora on the show.
But Vibora.
Yeah, which means snake. Okay. But the fans call me the Luchasaurus. And I was like, you know what? It's so crazy. It might work.
That's amazing. Right off the bat, they called you that. Yeah. You had a snake mask at Lucha Underground.
And I'm giant compared to everyone else.
Well, yeah.
And it was just, that was whatever, for whatever reason, that's what the crowd decided was going to be the smart thing, the funny thing to chant. And I was like, okay, well, you know what? There is no Luchasaurus wrestling independently. I need to kind of reinvent myself right now at this stage of my career. So let's just see what this can turn into.
Did you Google Luchasaurus? See if anyone else is using it?
Actually, I did not.
Okay. Yeah. Because you said there was nobody else using it.
There was some videos of, like, I think there was like a Luchasaurus, like there was a dinosaur doing flips in a ring or something in like one of those suits.
That's what I thought it was at first, because I thought that guy was like, I don't know if he's from some of those weird companies that you see sometimes, like in that Crash, whatever. But there's a couple
right
companies that do that sort of thing. And I thought, like, you know, like Michinoku Pro or something. I thought that's what the Luchasaurus was. Well, I've seen that guy. And then when I actually see the real Luchasaurus, I'm like, holy shit, that guy's a monster.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing. And it was, at first, it was challenging to get bookings because I don't think people were taking it seriously. And then in this day and age, there's a big, it's back and forth, but there's a lot of promotions that want kind of serious fighters. Mm-hmm. And the idea of it just sounds absurd. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what is this? It's going to be some kind of gimmick. The guy's probably not really a wrestler. He's horrible, or he's just a clown. It's a joke. So I had to fight against that for a while. And, you know, I was lucky to have good people in my corner that were like, you know, motivating me to continue with it. Cause there was times where I wanted to give up on it, where I was like, this is not going to get over on its own. It's too absurd. But, you know, John Morrison was really big on that. Trent Beretta, who's in AEW, he always told me to stick with it. He really liked it. So I did. And it, you know, it slowly but surely was allowing me to kind of explore who I was performing wise.
Well, the reason why, cause once again, too, it's memorable and it gives you, like, what's your character? Like, and I was not cutting down NXT or whatever, but you read the names and it's like, it's a soap opera. You take, here's the list of first names. What was your name? It was Judas.
Judas Devlin in NXT.
Judas Devlin. So, okay, first name's Judas. Last name's Devlin. There's your name. And there's, you know, this is, so Luchasaurus, A, you remember it, and B, what's the character? Well, it's a big, giant, you know, guy. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, at least you have some direction as to what you can do.
Yeah, half dinosaur, half luchador.
Is that what it is?
Here to remind you that life finds a way.
Okay, so that's my tag. Why don't you explain what a Luchasaurus is?
Well, what the Luchasaurus is really essentially is me. And it's kind of funny that it took me putting on a mask to find myself. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an interesting, like, existential thing that I've gone through. But what it started out was, is just like, okay, I'm going to be myself and express myself in the ring, because I couldn't figure it out when I was in NXT. I couldn't figure it out on my own between the time of that and Lucha Underground. And I didn't have direction. I was trying to find a character so hard. I was trying to force something. And then I just put this mask on and said, you know what? What do I like? Well, I like to do martial arts. I like gymnastics. I like Mortal Kombat. This is a crazy character. It kind of lets me tap into like my childhood where I like Conan the Barbarian. I'm just going to kind of run with things that I like and just be myself in the ring and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely, I was able to develop a style and something that's totally unique. So now it's like people need to see the Luchasaurus in person or see me wrestle to kind of go, okay, I get it. Because there's people will see it on paper and go, what's that? But when they see it, it seems to, for some reason, I've been able to connect now with people and they say it feels authentic. And I think it's authentic because I'm out there not trying to be anything but myself. Mm-hmm. And that's been kind of, for me, the thing that's gotten people to finally look at it and go, oh, wow, I really want to book this. Oh, AEW wants to sign this. So I think the Luchasaurus is essentially somebody that believes in who they are and is not going to, you know, it's going to take another layer to find all the layers underneath.
What was that little tagline that you said before?
Life finds a way. The Jurassic Park tagline. Oh. I don't know if I can use that in AEW.
You can use it here. It's fine.
Well, there we go. Okay. Well,
it's interesting that, like you said, the fact that you had to put on this mask to figure out who you were.
Yeah.
You know, and that, pressure maybe or.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, I think ultimately the mask can represent a lot of things, but it allowed me to first feel comfortable and like, okay, I felt like something else. I felt like a monster. I could walk around and kind of be a character. Mm-hmm. So that was the first step. It just kind of let me not feel so self-conscious and trying to impress people. And I realized, oh, actually the look itself is kind of impressive. So I can kind of get away with that now. But then it was like, wait a minute, let me discover who I am underneath this. And I found that, you know, what the things that I'm passionate about can be displayed if I'm just kind of true to myself out there and just kind of feel what I'm doing. I started reacting in the ring more than thinking or overthinking. And I just started to let it kind of come naturally. And that it started with the mask. And then I kind of, now they're starting to develop, you know, some backstory to Luchasaurus, and I'm allowing all my own personal things that I've done over my life to kind of come out in the character, like my educational background, things like that, that kind of are even more absurd to go with the dinosaur mask. But essentially putting on the mask has been kind of a freeing thing. It's let me just feel freedom out there. And I think that's, and ultimately it's, to me, it's about constantly evolving as a person, as a performer in life, and then finding what you're passionate about and constantly like pushing that boundary and being, finding whatever it is and focusing on that and getting better and better at that and discovering more and more. It's art.
It reminds me a lot of Kane.
Of
Glenn, because Glenn had done a bunch of different characters and, you know, different, you know, in different territories. But when he put that Kane mask on, and one of the best all-time sellers with a mask. Like, when you put the mask on, you're losing some of your facials, but he really got that across. Also reminds me a little bit of you. He's a big, tall guy, super smart, very educated. But when he put that mask on, it allowed him to be something else and really find out who he was as a performer.
This is actually the first guy I tape studied when I got the mask was Kane.
Really?
Yeah, I immediately went to Kane. My vision was a kind of a new age Kane. That's why I wanted the hair out. And I wanted to make it just a face mask and kind of open up the mouth. Because I did want to have some expression still. At first, the mask covered my entire face completely. And I wanted to have my eyes more showing and also my mouth so I could do some kind of selling that way. But yeah, just watching the way he moves and acted with the mask and how it evolved over time as he got better and better at it too. I studied all of that. I studied him and X-Pac kind of working together for me and Jungle Boy's kind of ideas that we've had. And yeah, he's definitely the guy that for me was the first thing I was looking at. And because, yeah, selling with the mask is very difficult, especially when these kind of masks kind of are moving around a lot, too. So it's hard to, like, whip your head back and things of that nature without feeling like you're going to lose the mask. But the way he did it was so good. And it was just, the moment he put it on, it was just something special.
It's like when you watch, it's kind of obscure, but I think you'll get what I see. You watch Halloween.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
The way Michael Myers works, I'm not sure who the actor was, but just cocking his head like a dog.
Yeah.
Just a little confused and... for a completely just expressionless face to have that, you have to use more subtle movements, not over the top like waka waka, but just very little things. But the little things is what makes a great character and a great performer.
Yeah, and that was actually some of the struggle at first with the characters. I was trying to do too much because I was trying, I have to sell, I got to show all this expression. I got to move around, go crazy. And some of the guys would talk to me and be like, hey, you know, if you just slowed that down and, you know, did this really slow turn here or there, a quick, like, subtle look, just like Kane does, just like the monsters in the movies do, it's going to have so much more carryover and impact. And I'd watch how Undertaker did it, too, because Taker would do that. You'd kick him up and he'd have that stare, or he'd look at the referee and the referee would go flying. It was just those little subtle movements that have a lot of power behind them. And that's a lot of... it's a lot of responsibility as a performer to understand how to not throw that away and how to utilize that. And over time, I've kind of realized... you know, because there's a lot of things I want to do in the ring athletically, but if I don't do it the right way, it kind of diminishes the entire point of being the Luchasaurus monster.
Exactly. Especially in this day and age when there's not too many guys your size.
Yes.
You go back 10, 20 years ago, there was a number of guys your size, guys that were deceptively big, like Billy Gunn, perfect example.
Oh my God,
you know, he works with us now. You would never think of Billy Gunn as a giant, but he's a fucking giant. He's huge. And then you had guys like... Midian and Henry O. Godwin. And
oh my God,
you would never think twice about these guys, but they're legit 6'7", 6'8". You don't have that anymore. So a guy like you stands out. And I always say, I used to say it to Rusev when he was in there doing matches with Sin Cara, taking bumps. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Well, you know, you don't have to be an asshole, but you do not need to be taking bumps off a dropkick from a guy who's, you know, 175 pounds when you're a legit, you know, 300 pounds, 280. So that's something that you have to think about too, especially in this day and age.
Yeah. And you know, the guy who most has helped me with that is, I'm going to say again, is Trent.
And really?
Yeah. We've been friends since developmental. I met him in 2012 when I was in FCW and he was kind of about to leave WWE at that point. We were like neighbors in Tampa. And we've been friends ever since and really close friends. And we actually tore our biceps at the same time, like a year ago. Yeah. So we'd be in the VR helmets sitting there with our torn biceps playing chess. But he was always, I had a match with him for Joey Ryan's Bar Wrestling and he flew in to do the match with me because he wanted to help me. And that was the match that really turned the lights on for me with the character. And I was like, now I get it. And the way he paced it and set it up and the way he made me keep my size and not in an asshole way. He was able to do it in a way I still took his moves, but we made him mean more. And I was like, okay, I get it now. And he was always telling me, hey, you should do this, but do it a little slower here. And when I finally pieced together what he was saying, it's kind of all started to click, and now it's become more signature. It's when I do certain things, they'll be like, oh, that's the Luchasaurus doing his thing, rather than just me looking like every other guy doing something, mm-hmm. which again, defeats the whole point.
Right, exactly. What were some of the things that he told you?
Some of the main things is because I like to do a lot of the martial arts kicks that I do. I want to do a bunch of the flip stuff because I do all the gymnastics. And he
really?
I've been doing gymnastics for over... Actually, that's how I met John Morrison, was before I was even signed with NXT. Yeah, we would do gymnastics together at a parkour center.
Parkour, yeah.
Yeah, so I had that background and I wanted to use it in the ring, and I was always trying to figure out how to. And when you have all these ideas, you do too much usually at first.
Sure, especially when you're starting.
Yeah, so that's what I would do. And I'd want to do like, you know, four different versions of a nip up and an opening spot into a three kicks. And he's like, how about you just do the one kick and stand there. Mm-hmm. So I tried it once at a Ring of Honor show and it got such a better reaction. Mm-hmm. And then I tried like later on in the match, okay, here comes the big combo. And it worked so much better. And I'm like, okay, now I'm starting to see there's a whole nother way I can be approaching this.
Right.
And now the crowd's like, oh, now I'm with this thing the whole way through. Now I get it. Now, oh, you're great. You're amazing. I'm like, I haven't really done anything different. I just kind of place things differently.
And that's the secret of wrestling. It's not what you do, it's when you do it.
Yeah.
You know, and just because Brock Lesnar can do a shooting star press doesn't mean you should do one.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I was in Japan. It was a guy called Big Titan. He was the fake Razor Ramon, but for years he was pretty popular in Japan, basically your size guy. I brought him in there because he was a Calgary guy, worked in FMW for a while, and then I brought him to WAR. And his first night in, he was with Tenryu, who was the big star, legendary Tenryu. Mm. And, you know, Japan, the two big guys, they're looking for big guys to be up against the big guy. And I remember they did this thing where they did like a double tackle, both stood there, people popped, something else, double tackle, and then chop, 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 he shot him off the ropes, and then he jumped up and gave Tenryu a flying elbow, and Tenryu didn't bump, and Rick hit him, Titan hit him with the elbow and landed on his stomach, and Tenryu didn't bump, and that was it. Done.
Wow.
Done. Don't leave your feet as a big man unless you have to. Done. Wow. He was finished, and that was just like that. I never forgot that lesson where, especially when you're that size guy, you better pick your spots to leave your feet or else you're just another guy.
Yeah.
Right.
And I've had matches like that on the indies with guys that wanted to bump me a lot, and sometimes their matches, no one's really gonna, I was like, okay, let's do it. And by the time I got to my stuff, I just could tell the crowd's not with it the way they should be. And it just doesn't feel right.
Exactly. And that's what you learn with more experience.
Yeah.
All right. You guys know that I travel every week for AEW and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway. So even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer.
There are a couple things here. You mentioned Jungle Boy.
Yes.
It's funny because Jack did the podcast sitting exactly where you're sitting right now.
Oh, boy.
And since... I've met him and met you. I see you guys are constantly together. He's always on your shoulders. What's the relationship there?
Well, the funny thing is me and him actually started training wrestling the same week in 2009 or 10.
He was like nine or whatever.
Unfortunately, he was the age. I was like 22. But we could pretend we're the same age. But it was so, we in Van Nuys at Rick Drazen's School of Wrestling, like this local little place. And we had no idea what we were doing. We kind of vibed right there, and like we would have like these matches in the backyard, and then we both went on our own separate kind of journeys, and then all of a sudden we're meeting back at the same time, and our gimmicks just kind of worked together. So we decided to start doing this, and we did a couple of these little stints at Joey Ryan's Bar Wrestling, where he comes out on my shoulders, and just the looks on people's faces. It was like a Disney movie come to life. People are just smiling and are generally happy. These are hardcore wrestling fans that want to throw things at me. And they're like, they can't help but smile. It's almost like the little kid came out in them just watching this. And I feel like we kind of really work well together in a lot of ways, not only because we can do things in the ring that are pretty dynamic, but I think my personality can come across any rough edges that I've had, he smooths out because he's such a natural baby face. And it's just like, how can you not get behind the kid in the forest who doesn't understand society? And the funny thing too is I did my master's degree on 12th century romance literature. And one of the main books was Parsifal, which is about the knight who was raised in the forest. And he has to go off into society and try to assimilate and he can't figure it out. And Jungle Boy is basically that character that I dedicated 6 years of my life to writing something on.
Wow.
And it just kind of, it's like, there's a lot of things that just come together for me with it. And I just love it.
The historical buffs in the crowd going, these are from two different time periods. Worst gimmick ever. Jungle Boys were never alive at the same time dinosaurs were.
Hey, I have the master's degree. I make the rules.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Let's talk a little bit, and I want to talk about your master's degree and all this sort of stuff, but let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned NXT, and it seems to me, and once again, we never, or you probably know the reasons why, or maybe you don't, but a guy like you walks in there, knowing what I know about WWE and about Vince and about Hunter, kind of a no-brainer to see the size that you have, the look, the tattoos, all that sort of stuff. You can talk. How long were you there for, and then why did you end up leaving?
Yeah, well, I was probably about 30 matches into independent wrestling, very new. And one of my matches was sent to WWE and they asked me to do a tryout at SummerSlam. And I think this is 2009.
In LA?
In LA, yeah. 2009 or 10. Oh God, I can't remember anything.
I think it was 10. Well, yeah. They did it 9 and 10.
Okay, yeah. And there was a bunch of guys that, you know, like Scorpio Sky was there, guys that are really good in AEW now. And for some reason, they liked me. So I didn't know why.
Sure, I wonder why.
I guess it was the look. It was mainly, they told me it was the look. Really, William Regal was really high on me. So they said they wanted to offer me a contract and have me move to Tampa. And this was, it was a transitional period for them. It was before NXT was starting. It was still FCW. And it was just, there was a lot of moving parts. People were very job scared at that time. And like people were getting laid off. They were cutting half the roster to move to.
Well, FCW at the time was basically a big warehouse.
It was a warehouse.
Was like 150 guys training in there or whatever it was.
And there was a lot of leftover from previous management. And I wasn't one of the, you know, the chosen ones. I wasn't one of the football guys that was brought in on a, like, this guy's, we're going to make sure he's a star. I was kind of like, he's not really an indie guy either though. We just like his look. And I kind of just got lost in the shuffle. I was not very comfortable. I hadn't decided that wrestling was my 100% focus in life. It kind of happened so fast. I had just finished my master's degree. And here I am for the first time in my life, I've left my family. I'm in Florida and we're, you know, waking up at 6 a.m. to do all these bumps. And I feel like every day I'm going to get fired if I don't perform right. And I just couldn't handle the pressure of all of that. On top of the fact that I was dealing with a major injury in my hip that I didn't know about, that I was kind of working through. Which ended up being a hip labral tear.
Oh my God.
And that was killing me that was so hard to practice in the morning. And I was just, I was a kid. I felt like I didn't understand. The only thing I was doing well with was promo class. And it was with Dusty Rhodes. And the funny thing about the whole thing is because he is the only person I felt that believed in me. And he took me under his wing and he said, I don't know what it is about you because you're the shits in the ring, but there's something about you in this master's degree and the look, and I want to figure it out. And it's almost like what the character Luchasaurus is becoming for AEW is what Dusty envisioned, kind of, which is really cool for me, considering that Cody kind of reached out with the contract offer. So it's like coming full circle. But he was the only person that that kind of believed in me, and I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for the situation. I wasn't able to do the politics yet. And ultimately, I just wanted to, when they decided I needed surgery, I was like, hey, look, I just want to go back to LA and rehab this. And they were okay with that. They wanted me just to, you know, kind of take care of that, get healthy. And I really didn't have an interest in going to Orlando when they moved. They didn't fire me. I felt like, though, as soon as I came back from the injury, I was probably going to be one of the people released. It just wasn't working. I knew it wasn't working. And I remember having a discussion with Canyon Seaman, who was in charge, saying, hey, look, I kind of just want to go back to the Indies and be free and try my stuff again because I'm not happy here. The system wasn't for me. I'm not someone that works well with kind of a militant, you know, program in place. I need to be free to express myself and train the way I need to train. Like, I hated practicing and I love practicing now. I mean, I love training and practice. I'm obsessed with it. And I wasn't happy doing it. So I knew something was wrong there. But I've never been someone that's good with taking authority on creativity. And when I did my master's, the professors were very open to let me do whatever I wanted. I couldn't go to high school. I was homeschooled because I couldn't handle a teacher telling me how to think.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's always been how I just approach things. So that system just wasn't right for me. And I think that was ultimately it. And but as soon as I left, I regretted it. I had regrets every day for the next 2-3 years. I wasn't wrestling. And in that time, it was like 2013-14. Indies were about to take off, but they hadn't. And I thought it was done. I thought it was WWE or bust.
Right.
I didn't really realize there was life outside of that in wrestling. And I remember talking to Joey Ryan. He's like, it's so hard on the indies, man. Like, it's if you can stay in that contract, stay in it, because it's not going to be what you think. And I was like, I don't care, man. I just need to, it's not good. I'm never going to express myself. I'm never going to find who I am. Because they were so big on, what's your message? Say it in a sentence, who you are.
Oh, really?
That was always the thing we got in, you know, when we were had little lectures and stuff. It's like, you need to know who you are in one sentence so that the audience can interpret it. And I'm like, man, I don't think I'm ever going to understand who I am in a sentence. And no, I don't think so
what
now
would
either.
You say? Like, what would some people say? Like, how could, I'm trying to think, how would I describe who I am as a wrestler in a sentence?
Well, their examples were things like John Cena. Hustle, loyalty, and respect. I'm like, that's not who he is. That's his t-shirt.
That's a catchphrase.
It's a catchphrase.
Right,
yeah. It was just things like that. I'm like, no, I don't know what the hell's going on anymore. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. I'm tattoos. I don't know.
Tattoo, beard, glasses.
Tattoo, beard, glasses, master's degree.
But that's what I mean. I find sometimes, and I never went through that system. Obviously, I went through a whole different way of you know, learning on the job, so to speak, and learning different styles. And I think life lessons was a big one too, because not that there's anything wrong with it, but no one was ever paying me to train and you know, showing me all these different things. But I think that a lot of times in that system, it does kind of limit creativity because you are told basically from step one, like, let's say you came into NXT today as whatever, a football player, actor, championship bowler, florist, whatever you are. From day one, you're taught, this is how we work, this is how you talk, this is what you do, this is the gimmick that you have, or whatever it may be, or come up with a gimmick. If we like it, we'll change it, you know? So it does kind of limit some of the chances that you have to take and a lot of the uncertainty of whether you're going to get to the next level or not.
Yeah, and the thing was, is I remember going to a PWG show after leaving developmental, and I was like, they're breaking every rule. This is all wrong. And then it started to hit me, well, wait a minute, there is more than one way to interpret this. And that's kind of where I've gotten to the understanding myself in the ring, was I had to get away from all the rules that I was taught in developmental. Not to say that they're wrong or anything. I think it's always great to learn a framework so that you can go outside the framework.
Sure.
If you don't have the framework to begin with, then you're not going to be able to kind of create and make sense of it.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful for the time I got to spend with coaches like Joey Mercury and Norman Smiley. Terry Taylor, they were very helpful in kind of shaping a framework that I've then been able to explore the boundaries of and sometimes completely break it because I have such a crazy character that can do that. And there's still always this struggle is always to make the most sense and tell the right story and the psychology. And there's always going to be times where I can learn more and need to know more. And you never stop learning. And I get advice from people all the time. And I love taking advice from anyone and everyone because who knows when someone's just going to say the right thing that clicks for the right moment. And so I've always been open to any idea. I just needed to go out and figure it out on my own. Kind of like what you're saying. I need to learn on the job.
I remember even when I first started working out, it was, you know, right around the time when Arnold was very popular and Lee Haney and bodybuilding was kind of the thing. And you would go to the grocery store and buy Muscle and Fitness and would have Arnold Schwarzenegger's blast out bicep blowout. And you'd get it. And it'd be like, you know, 30 exercises for bicep, way more than anybody should ever do. But it would give you, here's the template.
Yeah.
Take, and then they wouldn't say this, but then you would take the ones that you liked and then maybe change one and add this and change that. But at least you had a blueprint of where to start. But they didn't make you stick to it, obviously, because it's a magazine. But I think that's the same thing with what you're saying. Give me the blueprint and then let me mix and match it up a bit to figure out what it is that I do best.
Yeah, and I've had to have a lot of matches independently that I'm never going to see the light of day, thank God. But where I got to try a bunch of things that I would have been too afraid to try in developmental, at least in that time where it was, where a lot of people were job scared. And I've heard that it's better now and it's not that kind of situation, that at least how I felt it was. But I never would have tried to kind of push things in the ring the way I have with this character. Because I know that I can, that I'm not going to turn around tomorrow and be reprimanded for it.
Yeah, you can try stuff. That's what shows are for.
Yeah.
That's what house shows used to be for, trying a different catchphrase or trying a different move or whatever, a different mindset. You would get in more trouble for that.
In this age, you know? And I've thrown away so many things that at least I tried. I was like, okay, this looks horrible. Yeah. I watch it back and go, oh my God, why did I think that was good? But if I didn't get those opportunities, then I wouldn't have been able to get to the Double or Nothing and then show some of my better stuff that I knew would get a good reaction. So I would have been in a situation where maybe I want to try stuff. if I was in a structured system where I felt like I had to act a certain way.
Here's why you should be getting Factor meals. They're always delivered fresh, never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and delicious. They're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And if you go to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use my promo code TIJ50, you'll get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. Plus, how good does this sound? Parmesan and sun-dried tomato chicken penne with roasted green beans. That's what I had last week before heading out to AEW. Factor makes eating delicious, quick, and easy, which is exactly what I need, especially on travel days. I ate it right out of the Factor packaging as well, so no cleanup afterwards. So you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need, and you can pause and reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. So head to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use code TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code TIJ50 at factormeals.com/TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
How did you get the name Judas Devlin when you were there? I'm always curious to hear.
Well, that's actually interesting. I got the name, Devlin was one. They gave me like a list of like 10 last night. Like they said, just write down names that you think are cool. So like, it was funny. It's like the first day the coaches named me Judas because we don't want to call you Jesus. The all the other guys with beards and long hair, they're, you know, everyone looks like Jesus. You're Judas. So I'm like, all right, that sounds kind of cool. So yeah. I was like, let me just get on the coaches' good side and put that down on my list as the first name I want. And so they love that. And then I just sent a bunch of like historical last names. They hated all of them. But like my friend Jay's last name that I worked with at a bar was Devlin. Mm. So I was like, let me throw that in. They're like, oh, Judas Devlin. It sounds like Judas and the devil. Oh, this is good. Yeah, yeah. He's going to be a heel. So that's how I got the name. It kind of was, I remember Bray Wyatt said, oh, I love this name, man. This is cool. Like, and he wanted me to get into his group when they first started it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they'd already kind of solidified what they wanted in there. But it was like kind of perfect for his kind of thing. And I was like, okay, this is something I can run with. And of course, you know, I wanted to do like the Sean O'Hare, Devil's Advocate kind of character with it. That it, like something where I was talking and I just, and this is what me and Dusty were working on. Like something where I was intellectual with the master's degree, but sinister. And we couldn't pinpoint what it was. And I think it ultimately was going to have to be something ridiculous with the mask to kind of, you know, to make it work. And I still, you know, I still like, people call me Judas. A lot of my friends in wrestling still call me Judas. And it's on my like Instagram and Twitter. I haven't gotten, I haven't accepted just Luchasaurus as my entire name. I like to think of it as a moniker still.
Well, the thing is too, it could be a nickname. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I always would say like, can you imagine this name being Luchasaurus, the AEW world champion? And yes, you can imagine it, but if it's not good, you could always be, you know, Austin Luchasaurus, you know, Schwartz or whatever the hell it is. So,
here we go to the Bell Mel.
There you go. There's the name.
Shit.
There's the name. Call Tony Khan. Were you working for Ring of Honor for a while too?
That was it. I was working with them, but not under any contract. I was doing, I did a like Future of Honor match for them in Vegas. Uh-huh. And it was kind of like on a whim. I just kind of showed up with my friend PJ Black and like we were talking with Marty Scurll and they liked my look and they're like, hey, you want to do a match? I'm like, yeah, definitely. So I did a match. They liked it. And then I did a series of other matches for them and it got out that I was signed and I wasn't signed. I never was offered a contract. And they said they really liked my work. They liked the character, but they just didn't know what to do with it creatively. So they were like, well, we're going to, you know, we'll call you here and there. I was like, okay. I thought I was going to be signed by them before AEW even kind of emerged. And then I remember I was texting Trent about it and he was with the Bucks and they're like, he's not signed. Oh, let's bring him in a Double or Nothing. Mm. So once again, Trent coming to my rescue, helping me out here, getting somewhere. But yeah, I enjoyed that. I really liked the Ring of Honor locker room. Actually, I was friends with a lot of the guys. I enjoyed working for them. It was just unfortunate, I guess, that they didn't really have an idea what to do with the character. And that was something I was running into. I thought, man, maybe I should just be Judas or something. And like Luchasaurus is, it's too much. Mm-hmm. No one can figure out what to do with it. And that's where, you know, people like my friend John Morrison, he was like, no, I love that. You got to stick with it. So I'm like, okay, I'll keep pushing it. I'll keep doing the independent stuff. And then the Young Bucks liked it and they brought me in.
You know, what's funny is that when we were putting together the roster, and I say we, like everyone was kind of throwing ideas around. I had a couple ideas, some that they used. We were looking for some bigger guys.
Yeah.
And I actually had seen maybe on Hurricane's Instagram or something, had done something. And at that point, kind of knew what the Luchasaurus was. Have you thought about Luchasaurus? Like, what about this guy? And then he said, Cody said, oh, he signed to Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
Like, oh, shit. Okay, well, forget about that guy. But now it's good that you weren't signed.
Obviously. Yeah. That was the thing. I was going to talk to Daniels or someone right away and be like, hey, they didn't sign me. Because Daniels thought I was going to, because kind of Daniels and Kazarian saw me when they were still with Ring of Honor. So they were putting in a good word for me. And then Cody as well. So they all thought, oh, he's signed. He's going to be with that crop that got signed. But I don't understand. I really still don't know what happened there, because I thought that maybe they didn't like my performance in one of the matches or something, but I thought I was going to be signed in January. And I guess things just kind of work out, because AEW, I feel like, is a better fit for what I want the character to be, mm-hmm. considering they allow me to explore it on their show, like me and Jungle Boy do our thing. And that's something that I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else.
Nobody's going to write the character for you. You have to figure it out for yourself.
And that's
just the way that it should be.
Yes. And I think that's when it becomes authentic.
Yeah, exactly. When that's when you're committed to it. Mm-hmm. What was your thoughts on Double or Nothing? How was that experience for you?
Oh, that was amazing. I never performed in front of the crowd in a full arena like that. I'd done tryouts and stuff and worked extra talent for WWE. So I'd been there in the setting, but never in front of everyone. And I wish I could say I could enjoy it more, but things were so, that match, I had so much to remember. I was so focused just on the match. I came out, I didn't even realize, oh yeah, there's like, you know, 12, 15,000 people here. I was just like, oh man, I got to remember this spot now. Because 20 minutes before the match, things got changed and I was asked to do a lot more. And we didn't even get it all in because time crunch, we had to cut a bunch of things. And me and Adam Page had a whole series of moves we were going to do at the finish that I didn't get to do. So I was kind of disappointed when I went to the back, and then everyone was like, oh, it was great. It was perfect. It's all you needed to do. And I've had nothing but positive responses on it. I'm like, wow, I didn't even do half the moves I was going to show people I could do. I was happy Jungle Boy and myself got to do our one little double team moment, because I thought that was kind of cool because we've been showing it on the show. Mm-hmm. And so that was fun for me. But the experience was definitely amazing. Vegas was amazing that entire week. I was there for like 4 or 5 days, and everywhere was AEW shirts. It was crazy. It was crazy. The whole strip. Couldn't go anywhere. And it's funny, not till after the match did everyone know who I was. Then everyone's coming up to me now.
But you know what? And what you just said earlier is such the case. You know, there's all these moves that you didn't do, yet people enjoyed the match. The match worked great. Once again, mm-hmm. the only person that doesn't know when you don't do something is you. The only person that mm-hmm. knows when you don't do something is you. And that's, it doesn't matter sometimes. You could have done those 4 or 5 extra moves, just get your shit in, mm-hmm. and boy, aren't you a fancy pants, and you know, the match doesn't work as well.
Exactly. And that's what I'm starting to feel more and more with every performance, is that it's really not about the moves. And it's especially once I've developed some of this like emotional connection with people, it's like Jungle Boy and I, after that, we did a little indie show the following week, and we really didn't do anything in that match. And it was probably the best reaction I've ever had from a crowd. Mm. And it's just because they were so invested now in us as a team, as a story. And it's just a different feeling. And I'm watching the match, and the guys are doing a ton of moves in our match, and there's just not really much connection to it. It's cool stuff. It's great stuff. But we get in there and we did our one little thing, and you could just feel something. And those are things that I'm now learning. It's taking me into a different mentality completely. And I think that's the next level of performing.
Well, you have to connect with the crowd is the most important thing. And like I said, we've talked about it quite a few times, not to beat the dead horse, but the Luchasaurus, you connect with it right away because it's very unique.
Yeah.
And then when you see the Luchasaurus, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to give this guy a chance. And if you're in a battle royal with 20 people and you've never heard of 15 of them, like for me, not that mm-hmm. I haven't heard of them, but I didn't know a lot of the guys, and they're all new, but there's the Luchasaurus. I know him. So that gives you an upper hand already.
Yeah.
Along with the fact that you can deliver as well.
And that's the thing. Like, I think I was talking to someone there, like, if you just, with what you look like and what you're doing, if you're just passable in the ring, it's going to be enough. But like, you're doing stuff that is sometimes high level, sometimes really good, I think. But which just makes it a wholly different level of like performance. And I'm really excited to explore that, because especially because me and Jungle Boy have a lot of ideas that we want to explore. We're excited about it because there's things that we feel story-wise that we can do that really is very unique, that probably has never been done in wrestling to a certain extent. So it's just like what AEW's, the platform they're giving us is like really tremendous right now.
Is the idea for you guys to be a team?
I haven't had too much creative discussions with them yet. I've heard that it's pitched around, and we really want to do it because we really both believe in the team together, or at least something. We've been doing all the vignettes, and they're getting over so well with the fans. It's amazing.
So what were the vignettes? Like, what kind of stuff would you be doing? Can Jungle Boy talk?
Well, that's the thing. We haven't let him talk yet. Right now, it's kind of like the idea is like I'm this educational figure in his life that he brought me to society with him. because he found me in the jungle, I guess.
Of course.
And
but or as you said, in the forest.
In the forest. But for some reason, I have the master's degree, and I'm speaking normally, and I'm kind of instructing him. I gave him a history lesson on one of the things where we talked about the Declaration of Independence, and my contention, of course, because I have the master's degree and I'm always right, is that it was in 1993 that we really declared independence when Lex Luger body slammed Yokozuna on the USS Intrepid.
Right.
Not 1776 or 78, if you want to be really technical.
Yeah.
But that was one of the things we did. The other one, we were in the grocery shopping and he couldn't get the top shelf and I put him on the shoulders. And we're in gear in the grocery store doing this. So just like kind of funny things like that, kind of exploring the humor aspect of things, but kind of in a smart way. Kind of like how I feel like you did this stuff in like early WCW, Chris Jericho doing heel character, where you got to kind of explore some humor that was self-deprecating and intelligent.
Yeah.
And like, that's something I remember. And I've always wanted to do something like that, because I thought you were one of the first, you know, guys to kind of push into
layered.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's what I want the character to be, is like, I want there to be a lot of layers to this. People are like, wait a minute, it's not just a talking dinosaur. Mm. There's a lot of interesting things about this guy. And it can be funny, it can be self-deprecating, it can also be serious.
I have to say a quick thank you to Pretty Litter, because it's been so peaceful at my house lately. Nobody's fighting over cleaning the litter boxes, and nobody's complaining about how bad it smells where we keep the litter boxes. Pretty Litter's altered absorbent crystals trap odor instantly, and the crystals last up to a month, so less scooping out of the box. And best part, Pretty Litter changes colors to help monitor early signs of potential illness in our cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues. It ships right to our door, so no last-minute trips to the store when we realize we're all out of cat litter. It's a win-win for my family, and it's a win-win for Mr. Mittens, Indy, and Snickers, my three cats. You and your cat or cats are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do. It helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keeps odors down. Go to prettylitter.com/Jericho and use the code Jericho to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho to save 20%. prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Did you get signed after Double or Nothing or before?
They announced it after, which was nice because it was like a good little like run of things going up for me there. Because they were like, oh, he did so great, they're going to sign him now. Yes. What a story. But they had already offered me the contract. I just hadn't finished. It was like right the weekend of, and like I want to make sure I looked over everything because, you know, that's a smart thing to do with contracts.
Absolutely.
So I just signed it the day after, and then I was like, hey, can you guys announce it? And you're like, oh, we're going to. And they just announced it, and it was perfect timing, because I just had the performance, everyone was talking about it. Mm-hmm. So it was like one good thing after another. I was like, okay, this is nice. It's nice to have a little run of, you know, some good luck here.
Yeah. And so are you excited and obviously excited about AEW and the prospects of it?
Yeah. Oh, I'm really excited. I've been really preparing for an opportunity like this for a while with my training and just the way I've been kind of approaching since when I signed with Lucha Underground for a season in 2000, it was like 2016. It was right after I did the Big Brother reality show. And, when I got back to wrestling, I was like, okay, this is it for me. I'm 100% committed. I know what I want in life. I'm going to train, focus, tape study. I went, and it was 24/7 wrestling for the next couple of years. And it got me to the point where I was ready for a performance at Double or Nothing. And now I'm ready or preparing for TV in October. And it's great because I have this time period where I know where TV is going to start. And, you know, I'm not content with just being signed. I really want to push how good I can be and contribute and make an impact in wrestling.
Have you talked to Tony Khan at all?
I haven't had a discussion with him personally yet. I would love to.
He's obviously likes the Luchasaurus gimmick.
I hope
he is to keep that.
I believe so. So far, it seems like everyone's really happy with it. And I think that's going to be the focus. You know, but you know, we'll see what develops storyline-wise, because things always mold and change over time.
You mentioned your master's degree. Do you have your master's in?
I have my master's in history. Mm-hmm. My emphasis in history was medieval studies, and I studied the Arthurian romances of the 12th century. So it was a lot of literary history and a lot of interpreting patterns of thought of a society. So I was not really focused on the political history or names, dates, and places. It was more interpreting how people in a culture thought and used entertainment, which was the stories of the time, to express themselves. And that's why I've always felt there's a major connection between that and the poets, what they were doing in court then, and what we do in the ring in wrestling now. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of parallels because there's no truth. It's open-ended. It's interpretive. And it's really about kind of showcasing who you are as a person, the subjectivity inside of you, what you want an audience to see, to remember, and to feel. And I've felt always really strongly about wrestling since I was a child. I wanted to be a wrestler since I was 7. And then I found this literature in school and I was like, wow, I'm connecting to this as well. So the goal has always been to kind of combine it all for me and make that a performance, a piece of art.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're talking about some of the history here.
Yeah.
So what would you do with that degree if you weren't a wrestler? Would you become a history teacher or would you... when you're saying you're studying medieval history,
yeah.
I mean, it's very interesting stuff, but now you're saying it's even deeper than that with more of the philosophies of medieval history,
yeah,
and not like torture devices or something like that.
No.
But what exactly would you do with that degree?
Oh, you'd put it on a wall and look at it. That's about it.
Go for the graveyard shift.
Pretty much. My professor always told me, Austin, get out of here. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, no, I like it.
Yeah.
I've never been someone that is a long-term planner. I'm very short-sighted. Mm-hmm. I'm passionate about something. I like to live in the moment. And right. I was passionate about this. And I was like, I'm just going to run with this and see where it takes me in life. Kind of like the same thing I've done with rest is I'm going to run with it and see where it takes me. I'm not planning long term. I'm planning for now because I got to do things that I'm passionate about.
Sure.
And ultimately, I was thinking, and still am, is that I really want to write historical fiction at some point. I love to write.
Gotcha.
And teaching is always an opportunity too. I could always be a college professor. Probably to be a major one at a university, I'd need to have proficiency in Latin and Old French to continue on with a PhD in what I'm doing. And that's, I mean, that would be a whole nother thing of focus. And to get back into that mindset, I've lost so many brain cells, I feel like wrestling with that it's hard to remember half of this.
They always said to me, like when I went to college after high school, like, because I always wanted to wrestle anyways, but I didn't know for sure if I could get into wrestling school and always be like, oh, take a year off. And it's like all... my parents and teachers was like, don't take a year off. If you take a year off, mm-hmm. it's hard to go back mm-hmm. to school after that, you know?
Oh, I'll still have school nightmares where it's like, it's the day of a big final and I never studied went to the class once. And I'll wake up like, why am I, I already have the degree, stop.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was a lot of stress. And I actually knocked out my thesis in 3 months and you get like 2 or 3 years to do it.
What was your thesis again?
It was in the 12th century romance literature and how it intersected with the society at the time and how there was a whole new level of ways of thinking happening in society. A lot of it had to do with the Christian church or the Catholic church and how the confessional came into play where they wanted people to kind of express their emotions. Before that, society was all about, as long as you look the part and act the part, that's all we care about. But now, no, you need to actually feel emotions for Christ on the cross and things like that. So they wanted one of the ways in which they got this through society was in the romance literature, because now knights would fall in love with the lady and you'd have to show that you were truly in love with her. So all these acts, but what really was going on is the ladies were running the courts because all the guys were off in crusade and they needed some way to collect money from knights. So these stories were fashionable. So knights would then give them patronage and they would give them money and pay all their taxes because they wanted to do what the courtly knight did. So it was really interesting how these stories were affecting history and even how history was written by monks. They were writing histories to make sure that everyone looked cool, like a cool knight, and they would change things and facts. And then you realize it really has no facts. And it was a bunch of made up stories and that history is a fabrication, much like wrestling. You know,
so all history is a fabrication, you believe?
To some extent, it's a fabrication only because you have to write it. Like history, nowadays you have, you know, cameras and stuff, and it's a different world.
Everything's documented, yeah.
But even then, it's still one perspective.
Right.
You know, it's always from a perspective. You're never going to know how many ants were in the corner over there, you know, eating something. Not that that matters, but it all matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why one of my professors always told me, and I use this in life, is that you can never get stuck in the trees. You always have to be able to see the forest through the trees. In life, in anything you're doing. And it's like the bigger picture is always going to be there. And yeah, you're going to focus on one aspect of it. And yeah, I'm going to write history trying to interpret patterns of thought, but I'm not going to tell you what really happened because I don't know. I'll never know for sure. But I can kind of get an understanding of why things moved the way they did and changed over time. And it's a real powerful thing when you realize that you might never find that truth you're looking for, but it's okay. And it's kind of helped me in life. It's like, I'm never going to know exactly in the ring or in life who I am to a T, but that's okay because I'm constantly evolving and changing and interpretations of myself will change.
And it's interesting too, like I've written 4 books and the first book, I wrote it in 2007. So the internet was starting, it was a thing, but it was written about my career from 90 to 99. That's a lot of Mexico, Japan, Germany, Canadian indies. So I couldn't go online and Google it or look up the timeline. It's a lot. So it's all basically from my head. Now, is all of it completely true? Of course not.
Right.
Is all of it the way I completely remember? I think so. You know, I think that's what happened. So my version of history, if it was the Bible, or not that I was, it's not at that length, but any other history book, so to speak, and that includes an autobiography because it's a history of my life, has some falsities in it just by proxy of the fact that you're writing it off of memory, right?
That exactly. And that's what happens. And that's the thing about history. And that's why history has changed so often and how it's written. Like when you study history, you actually study the way in which history is written, not the actual what facts are. The whole point of history is to understand why things happen, not what happened. Because the why is there. The what is always going to be changing. So like they've changed the way they look at colonial history. You know, they've talked about Christopher Columbus discovering America, obviously, at one point. Now you look at colonial history and you want to call it Atlantic history because Africa, the New World, and Europe were so intimately connected that you almost have to study the Atlantic Ocean to really understand how that time period worked in American history.
Because we know now, too, that Christopher Columbus did basically not discover America.
Yeah, I guess he was just in the West Indies.
Right.
Exactly. But which was critical because the sugar plantations they ended up putting down there motivated so much business and so much economy that, you know, half the reason we're here. Mm-hmm. So there's so many webs of connections that get lost when you focus on a political history from, you know, America's perspective or Britain's perspective. And everything is, you end up seeing how much things, that's why I like histories that were more about literature, because it gets too difficult with political boundaries and things like that. And there's this, history is often written by the winners of wars.
Of course.
So.
Like the WWE's history of WCW.
And there you go.
Exactly. They're writing exactly how it happened from their perspective and nobody else's.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, or it can be, because now you're creating a whole idea in people's heads of what is important and what wasn't and what made this happen and that. And that's going to go back and change again as other voices get heard. So things will constantly be rewritten. But yeah, that's the problem when one authority starts controlling knowledge. So it's like, it's not knowledge is not power. It's those in power sometimes tell us what knowledge is.
Did you remind me so much of Glenn Jacobs? It's hilarious.
Oh, boy.
I would like for you guys to meet someday to have these type of conversations, because he's right in there with you.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
You mentioned also Big Brother a couple times.
Yes.
Now, this is the show, Big Brother, where you live in a house and it's the...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Elimination show and all that sort of stuff. Tell us the story of that.
Oh, boy. Well, I got to call my therapist in on that one. That was a dramatic time in my life.
Was it just a normal Big Brother?
Yeah, it was America's Big Brother.
Gotcha.
And it was crazy for me. I mean, they put me in there as... They put a lot of people in there. They study everything about you.
Did you audition for this?
I did. I had an in with a producer. So I sent them a blurb I wrote about myself, you know, master's degree wrestler. And they're like, we want to hear more of this. So then I started doing interviews like we're doing. And they loved how I talked and what I had to say.
Giant guy with tattoos with talking about romantic history from the first century.
They're like, sold.
Yeah.
We're putting this guy in the house.
Yeah.
So I was like, I had no idea what I was really signed up for, how serious this gets.
Well, what is it?
Yeah, and it's just, so they take you away when it's time to go to the show. And they literally put you in a hotel room that is a sequester. So you're not allowed to have internet, phone, TV, anything.
It's like jury duty.
It's jury duty. And you can't leave the room to even work out. So for 7 days, you're in that hotel room before you go on the show.
Why?
I don't know. They're so serious about
it.
They can't risk you running into another contestant or someone that's going to spill the beans. It's like,
gotcha.
Because there's money involved. The winner gets $500,000.
Okay.
So they have to take it serious like a game show.
Right.
So that process alone is enough to screw me up because I can't sit there. My thoughts are too crazy as it is. So I'm already freaking out. And then they put you in front of 25 different interviews before you get in the house. Now you're the most important person in the world. And then they put you in the house where there's 5,000 cameras on you at all times. People are watching you brush your teeth. Mm. Like their fans are at home watching you sleep 24/7. And then you're in there trying not to get eliminated each week by people you don't know if they're lying to you or not. And half the people are basically characters themselves because they pick people that are on the spectrum of crazy. And then I felt like I was on one of the more, they told me I was very self-aware. And they like that because they only put a couple of those kind of people in there and see how the people that kind of are self-aware react and change as the days go by. And
wow.
And I ended up in like a whole showmance with a girl on the show. And
for real?
For real. I said, gotcha. I thought it was real.
Yeah.
And it was for a second, but you know, you get out of there and it's like, you realize you're completely different people and it just totally kind of fell apart.
It's like an on-set romance.
It's an on-set romance that you feel like this is definitely real. I'm living with this person 24/7. I must know everything about them. And then you realize, well, yeah, in that kind of society where there is no money, there is nothing else.
That, great point. No yeah. money, no commerce.
No commerce. I get out of there and I'm like a failed wrestler who has no money. Right. And this girl wants to be a model in LA. And yeah. it's like nothing against her. Like I, it definitely was, we weren't going to vibe. And it just, and I put so much stock into that. And I was so focused on the show. I had forgotten everything else in my life. So when that ended and the show kind of fell apart and I realized, wow, I don't really have any fame. I was just somebody that was on a show that sat there, brushed his teeth every day. Like,
how long were you in the house for?
89 days.
89 days?
Yeah.
Do you ever have like field trips or anything like that? Or
there was a couple times people got out for stuff, but there was like weights in the backyard and I got to work out. I was happy though.
Okay.
Like when I was in there, it was cool. They provided me food. I got to work out. I had a girlfriend. Like it was like a utopia. But it was also
interesting.
And there's cameras on me, and I get to be the freaking wrestler I want to be. I'm cutting promos all day long, and knowing people are watching me, and I'm playing a kind of a villain. I'm calling myself Judas. I was living the character I wanted to do in WWE, and I get out of there, and I'm just the most hated person ever by the fans. They just hated me, and I didn't understand why. I thought I was funny and like cool.
Just the way they portrayed you.
It was the way they portrayed me, but also the way I acted, and I wasn't being myself for sure, and I thought I was, and I was like, wow, I was literally living in front of cameras, putting on a front. And now I'm in a relationship that I don't really know the person. They don't know me. And like, I was just depressed afterwards. And then that all crumbled. And like, here I am. I remember I broke up with her and when I was driving home from Vegas after we broke up and like, I realized, wow, I have no job. I'm not wrestling. I'm at rock bottom. Like, this is nothing. Like, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And I remember I drove straight to John Morrison's house and he just got a ring in his backyard. And he's like, bro, we got to just get back to training, man. So me and him started training again. And the next week, Joey Ryan's like, hey, I got this Lucha Underground tryout for a couple friends. You want to do it? I'm like, no, I'm not ready for that. He's like, come on, just do it. I'm like, all right. I haven't wrestled in 2 years. I show up and they're like, okay, we're going to sign you. And I was like, okay, this is it. Now the signs are all there. I see what I want in life. I've hit the rock bottom. I've been through, you know, 10 million people watching on CBS, me fail as a human being. I can't get any worse.
Right.
I'm ready to be who I am. And so the experience actually ended up motivating me to really find myself.
How do you get eliminated from Big Brother?
Well, I got eliminated very interestingly, actually. But every week you end up, there's one person wins a competition where they're in charge of the house. And then they get to nominate two people that the rest of the house votes to evict one of them. So I was down to the final five and it was like an impromptu elimination. And I thought I was for sure okay. Because everyone said, don't worry, we're not getting rid of you. And then they just switched it on me last second and my friend Vanessa eliminated me. And I'm sitting there with no shoes. And I'm like, and I have to walk out the house.
Oh.
And like, I'm just shocked. I had no idea. It was the worst. It made for great TV though.
That's why they cut you.
That's why, of course, they loved
what
it.
What kind of tasks or contests would you have to do to win the control?
Oh God, they were so annoying. I was so bad at them too. There were a lot of puzzles. Like where you had to put, I hate puzzles. I'm just terrible at puzzles. Yeah, yeah. My brain doesn't work that way. Any of the physical ones I was better at. One there was a sprint, like just a 40-yard sprint, but you had to wait till they hit the button at the right time and run. And I won that one. But then a bunch of them I would lose on purpose because I was the big guy who was athletic. So if I keep winning, they're going to try to get me out earlier.
Oh, I see.
So there's a lot of strategy in that game.
A lot of strategy to it. Yeah.
And then also you make all these relationships so people want to keep you safe. And I had like the girlfriend who had a twin in there. So us three together made a real strong, like a team that no one wanted to get one person angry. So somehow we kept making it really far. And it was like, it was kind of cool, but it was just...
I can really see how that would warp your... almost Lord of the Flies or something
100%.
Like that, you know? There's a great Stephen King book called Under the Dome, not the TV show, but the book about, okay, first of all, this dome gets dropped on a city. And you're like, well, how do we get out of this dome? And that's the first half. But the second half of the book is how... they start the society, how you restart society in this world that you can't get out of. You can't leave this city, this town. And that's kind of like, I could see, like you said, how it just starts warping your perception and your reality and who you are.
And people are obsessed with the show. They love this thing across the country. When I got out of there, it was in Vegas. And the people would come up to us like we were the Beatles. Mm. Couldn't walk down the street. It's crazy because everyone from around the country's in, like, those are locations where everyone is. Airports, I still get stopped. People watch that show religiously and they feel like they know you because they're watching you kind of live.
They see you, yeah.
And they see you in your most intimate moments, right? Breaking down, acting like a fool, like I did often. So it's just a matter of, it's really crazy to see people get obsessed with it. You get obsessed with it when you're in it. And it's like afterwards you have these, and there's a voice always too coming on the intercom telling you, hey, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to say that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Cause I couldn't talk about things like I couldn't talk about WWE, anything that was, you know, I couldn't talk about you if you didn't sign a release.
Gotcha.
So they would cut the feed and go, hey, you can't talk about that. So
the voice of God.
The voice is in your head after.
What's that Jim Carrey movie where he's like,
is that the Liar movie?
No, where he's under a camera at all times.
Oh, the Truman Show.
The Truman Show. There you go.
Very similar.
It's the Truman Show.
Yeah. It's the Truman Show. And it doesn't leave you afterwards. For a while. And then when it does leave you, there's a void because you're finding yourself versus
It's like you got out of jail. Yeah. It's like Morgan Freeman in Shawshank. He doesn't know what to do in the real world.
And, yeah. And no matter what you think, when there's cameras on you, you cannot be yourself fully.
Oh, dude, I did Dancing with the Stars.
There you go.
And, you know, I was on for 7 weeks. So same idea, not every step of the way. But like you said, I mean, they will use those sound bites to your detriment.
100. Oh, man, you know, that happened to me so much.
The week I got kicked off, I knew I was getting kicked off beforehand because a lot of different factors, how the show works. And by Thursday, I knew we're not making it past. And the one part of like all this rehearsal, I remember one part I was like, I don't get this. I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe one 10-second outburst out of 72 hours of rehearsal.
Yeah.
When they showed the video package before our dance, they must have replayed that freaking thing over and over again. I'm gone. They're planting seeds in the people's heads that Jericho doesn't know this dance. I'm done.
Yeah.
And like you said, too, once I was finished, I went through huge withdrawal. I didn't know what to do with myself. There was no dancing class. There's no every single moment of your day mapped out. I get it.
Yeah. And that's too why, you know, like after the show, like a lot of these showmances kind of work for a minute because you want to stay close to the people that just went through this experience with you.
Right.
And you're trying to recreate it on the outside. But once you have that time pass, you kind of get back to, okay, who am I? What am I doing?
Yeah. Who am I? Exactly.
Who am I is always the big question. So ultimately the whole thing though was a really solid life lesson for me. And I think it was the thing that finally made me grow up.
Yeah.
And kind of be like, okay, now I'm fully aware of myself, my flaws. I've seen it shown to me on TV. And I was ready to kind of like personal relationships and professional relationships. I was ready to kind of move to the next step in my life.
It helped you for wrestling too, because you said you know what it's like to be on camera. And,
oh, yeah.
And you, like you mentioned, you're always performing whether you think you are or not.
Yeah.
It probably made a big difference for you.
I think it made a big difference in the way I'm able to conduct interviews because I had so many. And also just, yeah, being in front of that audience, it's a huge audience that's on you at all times. And I've kind of got desensitized to that. I remember before Double or Nothing, like Jungle Boy and I were in the back and he was real nervous. And I wasn't feeling nervous at all. I mean, I have the typical nerves that you have for any performance when you're going over what you're supposed to do. But it wasn't, to me, it didn't feel any different than the indie show I did the week before in front of 30 people because I just feel comfortable. And I credit it to that.
And I can tell, like, the difference, once again, talking to Jack, Jungle Boy, exact same seat as you is. And he was great, but you can tell he hasn't done a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
With you, I can tell that you've done a lot of interviews. Yeah. And that you can just see right away. We're not on camera right now, but we are on the microphone, which is the same thing. When the red light goes on, you have to be interesting and fill up the dead air and just, and you know what I mean? You have to put on a show.
Yeah. And before that, even I was teaching like Western Civ at college to 100 freshmen. So, I mean, I've done a lot of things in front of people, which is funny because I was very introverted in high school and I didn't go to high school. I was homeschooled. So it was like, I kind of found a voice for me was I've always been comfortable in front of a group more than one-on-one with somebody, like trying to go on a date, for instance. Yeah. I've been better in front of an entire group than it is like in more intimate situations. And I've had to learn to grow with that as well, you know, personally, which is good because I finally have a girlfriend that, you know, seems to love me and it's working out well finally, so.
Well, as we wind down here, now that you have got this contract with AEW, you're on your way. You're now a full-time contracted wrestler again in a very big league. What are you thinking for the next few years? Obviously, there's a big TV deal coming up.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of on the watch now. Everybody's under the microscope.
Yeah, which I'm excited about because I've been waiting for that. And I feel like I'm pretty confident in what I'm capable of with this character and just in the ring in general. So I'm excited for the opportunity. I've just been waiting to have the eyes on me so that I can deliver what I've been waiting to deliver. I've been preparing for this, and I'm expecting, you know, I'm hoping this goes great. I think it's going to be a successful venture. I'm excited about being a part of it, and I'm ready to kind of take the next step in wrestling. I don't want to just have the, you know, the Double or Nothing
Battle Royal.
I want to have the main event matches.
Battle Royal, yeah.
I want to be in situations where they're like, hey, we need you to do this for 30 minutes. We're depending on you. Like, I feel like I'm in a position where I'm ready to take that burden of responsibility. Whether I'm going to be the best performer or not, I feel like I can do it, and I would like to do it, and I'm not afraid of it.
Mm-hmm. Who are you looking forward to working with?
Oh, man, so many guys on the roster.
Such a great roster.
Yeah, I would love to work with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kenny Omega, obviously, is someone that has really... He's one of the guys I started to really gravitate towards when I was, you know, starting the indie run as Luchasaurus. I was watching what he was doing in Japan, and he's been a huge motivation for me, seeing how he structures things, how he performs, all the little nuances. So someone like him would be a dream to work with. Just being in the ring with guys like Adam Page, it was like, wow, this guy, like, I never worked with him, and it was so cool because it was, mm-hmm. we just vibed right away, and he was so good in there. Obviously working with Jungle Boy, us wrestling the Young Bucks would be a dream. So there's so many dream scenarios. I still want to have a singles match with Trent on this kind of stage as well. That's been something we've talked about for a long time.
It's cool because there's a lot of guys that you guys know each other.
Yeah.
You know, and that's always nice when you're in there with your friends.
That's the thing. I've walked into that locker room, and it was such a warm, inviting family atmosphere. And, you know, I had my girlfriend backstage, and she was doing my makeup for me for the thing. And, like, that's something in WWE I would have been worried, oh, man, I'm going to get heat for this. Yeah. But I had asked ahead, but I'd still probably get heat. But everyone was so welcoming, and she was just, like, a part of the family. Mm-hmm. And then I was talking with the Young Bucks and their wives, and they were fans of me on Big Brother. I was like, what? This is crazy. So it just felt so good, and it was such a different vibe from what I had experienced previously in those big situations. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's a refreshing feeling, and I was like, this is how it should be, because I just want to go out there and have a great performance and entertain the crowd. Mm-hmm. And there's no weird pressures. There's no worried about, okay, am I gonna do the right thing for this agent, this producer, or like, what did he mean when he said this? Like, there's none of that weird doublespeak that you
much
often
more creativity
get.
Creativity and not worrying about getting heat.
Not worrying about getting heat. Like, hey, do your thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was great. So like, that's the kind of environment that I've dreamt about, and I feel like I could excel in.
Last question for you: what's your favorite match that you ever had?
Oh, my favorite match that I've ever had.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, damn, that's a good one.
Is the one that jumps into mind.
Yeah. I'd have to say wrestling Johnny Mundo on Lucha Underground.
Oh.
That was, I was preparing for that match for so long. They finally gave it to me on season 4.
And you called the Luchasaurus then?
It was Vibora. But the crowd's chant Luchasaurus. Gotcha. It was basically the Luchasaurus versus it.
They don't own the trademark.
Yeah. Right, so, yeah. And me and him were so excited to do that match, because at that time I was living with him and Taya. Like, mm-hmm. we all lived together. And like, we were preparing ideas for that for a while. We didn't know if it was going to happen. They gave it to us, and that was my first chance to really show everyone that, like, hey, I can hang.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the next night I tore my bicep on a run-in.
Oh, wow.
And I felt like it all crashed down right after that. I was like, all this time I finally got the approval. The whole locker room gave me like kind of a standing O afterwards. I was like, oh, I finally belong. And then I tear the bicep the next day. But it all kind of ended up working out, because after the bicep tear, that's when I started developing my kind of my kicking ability, because I couldn't do anything else but kick.
Mm.
And now that's kind of my signature. So right. So it's actually it's all kind of evened out. But that probably is the match that stands out the most to me, just because we finally had that match, and he's been my best friend and supporter since before I was in WWE.
Mm.
So, and he visited me when I was injured in Tampa. Like, he's always been someone that's been by my side. So it was really cool to have that one.
Many more big matches to come. Hopefully. Man, the Luchasaurus. And also, I'm looking forward to your romantic history novel. Your first medieval romantic history novel.
Oh, it's going to be, there's going to be featuring a dinosaur for some reason.
Thanks, dude.
Hey, thank you.
All right, AEW's TV show Dynamite premieres this Wednesday night, October 2nd on TNT at 8 p.m. The show is a stack card. Me and two mystery partners versus Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. Cody's going to start off the show versus Sammy Guevara. Plus, Brandy's going to be there. The AEW Women's Championship will be decided. Nyla Rose versus Riho. Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, I'm sure, will be there as well with Marco Stunt. Tune in and find out all what's going on TNT this Wednesday night at 8 p.m. This is the only wrestling show you need to watch this week, trust me. And also, the only cruise you need to go on is Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea Part 2. We're all sold out, but you can still sign up for the mailing list at chrisjerichocruise.com. Come join me, all of the stars of AEW, all the aforementioned performers I mentioned, Ric Flair, NWO, Jake Roberts, Queen Charmel, Booker T, MVP, Fluffy, who was just on earlier this week, so funny. He's the host, Gabriel Iglesias. Craig Gass, the Guerrero family, Jack Slade, Conrad Thompson, Fozzie's going to be playing Farewell to Fear, Rubik's Cube, Killer Queen, Kickaxe, Light the Torch, Dave Spivak Project, Jared James Nichols, DDP doing live yoga on the ship, Beyond the Darkness telling ghost stories by, not a lit fire, but campfire ghost stories. We're sold out. Get on the waiting list at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. There's still a chance for you to have the vacation of a lifetime. And there's still a chance to come see Fozzie. We've got 2 dates left on the Unleashed in the West tour. We're in Hattiesburg, Mississippi tonight, and our last show tomorrow night in Atlanta at the Masquerade. Both VIPs are sold out. Atlanta's still some tickets available, and Hattiesburg still some tickets available for the actual gig. Go to FozzieRock.com for that. It's going to be such a great windup of this amazing tour. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. We're next Wednesday. Guess what? It's our 600th episode. Can you believe that? 600th episode, and it's the return of Kevin Smith. We're doing a watch-along for Pulp Fiction. That's right, the 25th anniversary, one of the greatest movies of all time. Kevin and I do the watch-along, just like we did for Bad News Bears a few months ago. I thought that's a great 600th episode. Pulp Fiction, Kevin Smith, Chris Jericho, Talk is Jericho, episode 600, coming up this Wednesday. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. We'll see you next week.